a snake on my back. I keep a red bone on my side.
Good morning. Good morning. We got to get going, so we'll just jump in. Welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuning in live this Wednesday, September 16th, 2020. Welcome to Road Warrior Radio, where we unravel and perhaps reverse engineer the pervasive theosophical and esoteric, you know, occult influence and try to shed it. But really, I would say, you know, ultimately we leave that to the Holy Spirit. And, you know, that's a battle that is beyond our scope and comprehension. So to understand it's happening and then to leave that to the proper authority, so to speak, that's kind of where we go. Before we dive back into the does voting matter question from Monday's broadcast and effort justification, which I intended to return to yesterday and didn't get back to. Before we return to that discussion, does voting matter and effort justification, specifically in regards to the upcoming so-called elections and the alleged COVID-19 pandemic, let's bridge yesterday's subject matter, namely the Samaritan woman at the well and the subject matter from the Union Jack prologue from which I read yesterday and I have from time to time over the years. Enter, well, actually, there's more also, but I'll save that for later, I guess, the bridging and the bridging back to things. You know, we go from where we start into probably William Sargent, Aaron Dyke's article, William Sargent, Dark General and the Battle for the Mind, and that was a mind control and brainwashing book that William Sargent wrote back in 1957. And so we kind of come full circle. You know, that was a very dark and sinister agenda. And there was a lot going on. You know, we've talked recently about, in recent months, about Biderman's Chart of Coercion, for example, which was also first published in 1957, and allegedly, you know, in view of the Soviet brainwashing and mind control techniques, and the same stuff was going on sort of all around the world while William Sargent was doing what he was doing. He and Dr. Donald Ewan Cameron were sharing notes, and Sargent even said at one point, whatever you, I forget exactly how he put it, but paraphrasing, you know, whatever you are successful in discovering, I was there first. I found it first. So, you know, people will say, Sargent was MI5, MI6, Cameron was CIA. It was all the same, you know, it was all the same Camp X sort of contingent. if you will, the same James Bond contingent. There are no sides, as Ned Beatty's character, Senator Charles Meacham, said in the movie Shooter. There are only haves and have-nots. So there was theosophical influence in the creation of the intelligence community, which isn't surprising when you go back and back and back and you realize that the, you know, John D. Francis Bacon, you know, sort of Baconian mantra was to create a society that sees all and is seen by none, which also should remind you of Baudelaire's quote, you know, the finest trick of the devil is convincing you persuading you he doesn't exist or didn't exist. So that's kind of a quick trip, full circle. But we'll start with this thing. So enter Refinery 29, and specifically in typical Tavistock Institute meets Frankfurt School cultural Marxist fashion, from Grace Baldridge's so-called State of Grace series, Grace in the State of Grace, how hijackingly apropos. The June 20th, 2020 episode titled The Dark Reality of the Christian Music Industry. What is the dark reality of which Grace ironically speaks, you ask? Well, probably not at all what you'd expect. I expected something different. And so this certainly wasn't what I expected. And yet, then again, as I watched, it entirely was, as it turns out, what you might expect. So without further ado, let's hear it from Grace herself. Grace herself, shall we? However, I reserve the right to interject from time to time. Go ahead, please.
Once I was out of the Christian music industry, I realized like a lot of the damage that was done while I was in it.
Music has historically been one of the most prominent and accessible forms of worship in Christianity. Music is a unifier that can transcend culture, language, and distance. But what happens when that experience gets commodified? Enter the contemporary Christian music industry. Emerging as a genre in the late 60s, musician Larry Norman pioneered contemporary Christian music as we know it today. All I'm really trying to say is, why should the devil have all the good music? He married his rock and roll style with a spiritual, Jesus-loving message and brought Christian music mainstream.
Kind of.
Since then, CCM has grown into a multi-million dollar industry, encompassing nearly every musical style, but united in one lyrical theme: praising the Lord. Between publishing, radio play, licensing music to churches, and live shows, this multifaceted industry is not slowing down. Major artists continue to sell out arenas, headline major festivals, and even appear on The Ellen Show,
which is a whole thing.
I was raised on Christian music. I know pretty much all the words to every DC Talk song, Switchfoot, Reliant K, Newsboys, not to brag. But as I got older, I realized that as a queer Christian, a lot of this music and the artists behind it would not be welcoming or affirming of who I am. So I set out to check in with the industry as it stands today. In an industry that's built on faith, with the product being a deeper connection to God through music, who is being championed? And who is being left behind? We all know Nashville is Music City, but it's not just country music they're exporting. Nashville is home to the majority of Christian artists, labels, and publishing companies. It's a uniquely positioned city at the intersection of Bible Belt ideology and entertainment sensibilities. My first stop is at the home of Lauren Deleary. Lauren and her sister performed in a Christian pop band called Love Collide. They were Juno Award-winning touring artists with three studio albums. Recently, Lauren began deconstructing her faith and pinpointing the ways her beliefs weren't compatible with the pressures of the Christian music industry.
Being in the Christian music industry, obviously you have to adhere to purity culture, especially as girls. It's this weird fine line between, like, you have to obviously look cool, but also not be, like, revealing. I remember one time we were doing a show. I lifted my hands in worship, and there's a picture where you can see, like, this much of, like, my stomach.
How dare you?
Yeah, I know, right? I remember somebody tweeted at us and was just like, how can you, like, consider yourself a Christian? How can you even say you're worshiping whenever you're, like, making your brothers in Christ stumble? With the skin that you're showing, with midriff.
Is it true you can't, like, jump and dance on stage?
Yeah. People would complain about it. Men would.
Right.
And they would say it was too sexual. One of our singles, I Don't Want It. The music video for it, we had, like, paint dripping. Yeah. And there's one point where I'm singing, and so there's, like, paint dripping down on my face. And we got complaints that it looked like semen.
Just out of curiosity, were these people, have we confirmed that they are aware of what semen just would be an interesting follow-up, because as far as I know, if it is hot pink, then you should see a doctor.
It's just wild to me, that kind of stuff. Like, to me, the modern Christian message right now is like, we are nothing, we are but worms. Putting ourselves down so much and then looking at a holy God, like, it's just all about this, like, huge gap.
While worship music can feel incredibly cathartic, the content of most popular songs is nonspecific and tends to rely heavily on generic formulas and, a lot of times, water metaphors. So Lauren and I gave ourselves a challenge.
I think that we should write an I Am the Worm worship song. Oh, but I am worm. Sort of as an example of the cadence of Christian music that is easy to match.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can do it.
Okay.
In 10 minutes. Something like, glory, you are not the worm. I will be my savior. You reach out to me.
Oh my gosh. You're like just doing it. Okay, I love it. Okay.
Well, that's what.
Okay. No, it's perfect.
I'm not saying it's a great song. I'm just saying that it's the structure of a worship song.
It's wonderful. Though I am not
and
worthy.
Or something like glory ever undeserving.
It hurts me.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking about, like, when do the hands go up in the service? And we will praise. Yes. It's sort of like a choose your own adventure of Christian buzzwords.
Exactly.
You know?
Okay. We're going to pause for a moment right there. It's sort of like a choose-your-own-adventure of Christian buzzwords. Exactly. Sound familiar? And before I go down that rabbit hole, there is a complete misappropriation of context and subject matter, which isn't surprising because we have a character in the fray here somewhere who has convinced the world he didn't exist and doesn't exist. And that's where a lot of this misappropriation of context is coming from. So if you read Psalm 22, for example, you know, you will see verse 6, but I am a worm and not a man, a reproach of men and despised by people, which is sort of a picture of Christ on the cross, taking the sins of the world upon himself, if you will. And the point, the misappropriation of context is... you know, that, well, like the Bible says, like Paul, you know, reminds us, there is none righteous, no, not one. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And so how do you bridge that gap? How do you bridge that gap? There's nothing, according to the Bible, that man can do of himself. You know, even the choosing is left to God, and that's the subject of much discussion, so to speak. You know, it's the idea that even those who are drawn by the Holy Spirit. And so that's a whole different discussion. The point is that God is the one who, you know, is worthy, is righteous, he does all of this, you know, he is the one who provides the justification, the sanctification, and so on. He's the one who deserves the credit, the glory. And so this is what we're listening to, you know, makes this all about the people being interviewed, which is sort of a window that people are supposed to look into and view themselves through that lens and that context, if that makes sense. So anyway, back to the Christian buzzwords thing. Does that sound familiar? What have I been saying about the Lucius Trust plan and work of the hierarchy seeking to intrigue the curiosity of the masses so as to lure us all into a theosophical Fabianist, Arthur Conan Doyle-styled choose-your-own-adventure simulation? That's exactly what we just heard. And what does it say that I only stumbled upon this episode yesterday? Just another ironic coincidence, I suppose. So, continuing, please.
Yeah, you rescue me.
Ooh, that's a good
something.
One.
We will praise you, Holy Father, and we adore you. You rescue me. That's when that harmony is full on.
That's when it's full on. Guys, we have a minute to spare.
Christian worship song,
we
9 minutes
it.
Or less.
And what's a song without a music video? Lauren had shared some of the guidelines from an imaging standpoint. Modest, covered up, still trendy, but in like a Mumford & Sons way, minimal movement. We did our best.
Glory, though I am not worthy, new with every morning, you shine down on me. And we will praise you, O Holy Father, and we adore you, you rescue me.
Let's write a song we care about.
Next!
So what do you want to write about?
What you sing is what you meditate on.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you're just singing over and over that you are unworthy, like, that's your meditation.
To be honest, I don't think I've ever felt like there would ever be a place for someone like me in worship music.
Yeah.
Because I haven't seen it.
To me, it's kind of just the opposite of what we just did. I would love to hear a worship song that's saying, I am worthy, or I belong.
So we started writing. And it took longer than 9 minutes. We took a break to get a fresh perspective.
Hey!
Hi!
Come on in!
This is Adam Palmer. He's a songwriter, musician, and former founding member of I Am They, a pop acoustic worship group. After going through a divorce and enduring scorn and criticism from his community, Adam stepped away from the band. He's since been on his own journey, navigating the industry with his own progressive and inclusive faith.
Okay, again, we're going to pause right there. He's since been on his own journey, navigating the industry with his own progressive and inclusive faith. Okay, progressive and inclusive faith, who's really all about the choose-your-own-adventure buzzwords here? So again, this serves as confirmation of the theosophical bent, because remember, you know, the work of the hierarchy is concerned with progressive, the bifurcated fallacy, I would call it, of the progressive conservative dialectical continuum. And it's interesting, speaking of the feigned persecution mentioned in the Union Jack prologue, the folks actually doing the persecuting here, and the mockery and the ridicule, namely Grace Baldridge, are employing psychological projection and gaslighting in an attempt, whether intentional or otherwise, because I don't want to impugn Grace. But, you know, we need to shine a light on what's happening here. To try to turn the tables in weaving a narrative. And back to meditation, you know, it's interesting. So there's mockery of things that people might genuinely, I mean, even Grace Baldridge herself says this music was very important to me at one point in my life. And the music itself is a subject we'll get to in a minute. But it may be important for people at times in their lives. It does appeal, obviously. And so to say, you know, to ridicule it, marginalize it, and say, now let's, you know, that was easy. It was easy to write one of these songs. Now let's write something that we care about. And if your meditation is, you know, if you're saying I'm just a worm, well, that's your meditation. Well, as I've said, all meditation is not created equal, certainly not in this context. And so again, Psalm 119, verse 97, oh, how I love your law. It is my meditation all the day. Your commandments make me wiser than my enemies, for they are ever mine. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. and knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Welcome back. We're listening to the Grace Baldridge's State of Grace episode over at Refinery 29 titled The Dark Reality of the Christian Music Industry as a primer to getting back to today's discussion and sort of tying some things together. But we will continue for a few minutes. We'll probably listen to the whole thing. It's about 18 minutes long, or we're around 7 minutes in, so here we go. Go ahead, please.
I think, without saying it, the average Christian listener wants the people on stage to be super Christians. They've really got the faith thing down. They're really dedicated. And like, I read my Bible every single day and night. Like, they want that so that they can project that, oh, that exists. And I
that
can
it's
strive.
Attainable.
It's attainable. And look, they've done it. But really, I found quite the opposite on the road.
Yeah.
Most people are struggling in their faith.
You don't have like a stable lifestyle, so you're always kind of in this flux of being confused with life. Mm-hmm. So questions and confusions, like part of the daily life when you're touring.
I've heard much talk about the names assigned to different demographics that Christian music targets, and I want to hear for myself. There's like a family of people?
Yes, excluding the dad. There's Becky. She's the mom that is really spoke to about the lyric of, I broke the heel off my shoe today, and the kids are making me late, and I have to clean up Cheerios, and blah, blah, blah. And then you have Taylor, which is the teenage girl, and she is targeted by heroes of modesty and purity. They want to pour into her this ethic of her sexuality needs to be this sacred prize.
And then what's the other demographic?
Austin. It's the teenage boy. He's listening to the hard rock bands like Skillet and the tough Christian rock bands. Mm-hmm. You want to be presented safe angst?
Safe angst?
Yeah.
Please, kids, practice angst safely.
Safely. God-honoring angst. The demographic focus is primarily based on it, reaching the mom.
So she's the one in the car driving around the kids.
Yeah, that's a fascinating implication as well.
Yeah.
Because it speaks into how we view gender roles.
Yep.
And the culture. And what's the mom supposed to be doing? Well, she's supposed to be raising the kids at home.
Right.
Doesn't leave a lot of wiggle room for, like, the mom that's out hustling and is the breadwinner. Like, yeah. That's not a thing.
Maybe we'll pause there for a second, too. And I don't want to drag this out too long, but, you know, what starts to come to mind as these kids are talking. First of all, there's no biblical reference in any of this, and it starts to sound more like it's drawn more from the Humanist Manifesto than anything that might be construed as Christian. So, I don't know. It's interesting. There's no biblical reference. That should, I think, tell you all you need to know. Not that it needs to be preachy or people need to be beaten over the head, but there's just, you know, it's the opposite. There's mockery. It's left out. The implication that, you know, there are all of these implications that we see floating around. You know, the Christian home, the typical Christian home, the demographic that is that they're discussing is essentially the same. You know, Adam Palmer is describing this demographic that's the same as the general public, that has the same sort of concerns and confusions and uncertainty, except they're trying to be, you know, perfect people, super Christian, as he says, you know, and so that has its own implications. And then, of course, gender stereotypes and gender roles and all of this kind of stuff. And, well, if you're just reading the Bible and consulting with the Holy Spirit, the secret decodering, I dare say you don't get really any of that stuff. And again, this is just sort of a backdoor, sort of an end run around trying to bypass the usual checks of the frontal lobe and your conscience, essentially sneaking in the back door and, you know, trying to create guilt and uncertainty and doubt and these kinds of things. And doing it in a way that seems like this is normal. This is, you know, everyone who is hip and with it, who is progressive, is struggling with these sorts of things. And so, you know, if you really want to be cool, then you identify these things this way, and, you know, this is how you move forward. But it's the same old trap. So, we're running short on time, but, you know, if you're familiar with the Humanist Manifesto, first manifesto entitled simply A Humanist Manifesto was written in 1933, primarily by Roy Wood Sellers and Raymond Bragg, published with 34 signatories, including philosopher John Dewey. Unlike the later ones, the first manifesto talked of a new religion, quote unquote. Anyway, stick around, I'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We have a special promotion going on at Republic Broadcasting. This is a fundraiser for Republic Broadcasting involving the Energy Planner. Mail me a postcard. My address is at my website at thelibertyman.com. We pick a postcard every other Thursday. When your postcard is drawn out, you get to buy an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285, $70 discount. $200 goes to Republic Broadcasting. You also get a 10% discount on my mattress pads. So get those postcards in, put your name, your telephone number, your email address on there, and when your postcard is drawn, you get to get an energy cleaner for $215 instead of $285. Mattress pads, 10% off. Help us out at Republic Broadcasting and help yourself to get an energy cleaner at a deep discount. It's a win-win situation for everybody. We hope you can get these postcards in soon. Thank you very much.
Extend your life with Extendovite, a seven-herb combination made from garlic, cayenne, bilberry, hawthorn, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Each herb was chosen for their abilities to help improve irregular heartbeats, chest pain, lower cholesterol, as well as normalize blood pressure and clean and strengthen arteries, plus much, much more. Doctors have taken people off of some or all of their pills just because they believe their patients got better while taking Extendovite. Get the dependability of Extendovite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A two-month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
It's the good life. Full of fun seems to be the ideal. Yes, the good life lets you hide all the sadness you feel. You won't really fall in love, 'cause you can't take the chance. So be honest with yourself. Don't try to fake romance. It's the good life to be free and explore the unknown. Like the heartaches when you learn you must face them alone. Please remember, I still want you. And in case you wonder why, well, just wake up, kiss that good life goodbye.
Welcome back. Before we dive back into this episode, the dark reality of the Christian music industry, which is, a twist on what I would have expected. I would have thought we'd actually dig into, you know, how that industry actually works. And it's the same, you know, maybe kinder, gentler, predatory industry as the larger pop music industry. Speaking of the Frankfurt School and the Tavistock Institute. In terms of art. So, Psalm 119, verse 99, I have more insight than all my teachers, for your testimonies are my meditation. That's a different kind of meditation than I think is being discussed or proposed by these young people here in this episode. So, I mentioned the Humanist Manifesto real quick before we jump back in. Just as an example, what do you mean? Why do you say it reminds you of the Humanist Manifesto? Well, a couple of things from Wikipedia. If you go to the Humanist Manifesto general entry on Wikipedia, you will find, you know, the document outlines a 15-point belief system. Well, this is the first one that I mentioned, 1933, endorsed by folks like John Dewey. Unlike the later ones, the first manifesto talked of a new religion, quote-unquote, and referred to humanism as a religious movement to transcend and replace previous religions that were based on allegations of supernatural revelation. In other words, you know, the secret decoder ring, 1 Corinthians chapter 2, the Holy Spirit. Who decides all that kind of stuff? The document outlines a 15-point belief system which, in addition to a secular outlook, opposes, quote, acquisitive and profit-motivated society, which is interesting when you start to look into Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28 and see how this character was corrupted, what happened, and outlines a worldwide egalitarian society based on voluntary mutual cooperation. Language which was considerably softened by the humanists' board owners of the document 20 years later. All right, so skipping to the Wikipedia entry for Humanist Manifesto 1, and the text of the manifesto specifically, numbers 4, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 12. Tell me if this doesn't sound like, if you said this to these young people, would they say, yeah, that resonates. Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. That's what we want to do. That's good. We should do that. Tell me if this doesn't sound like it would fit into the fold of what they're discussing. Fourth, humanism recognizes that man's religious culture and civilization, as clearly depicted by anthropology and history, are the product of a gradual development due to his interaction with his natural environment and with his social heritage. The individual born into a particular culture is largely molded by that culture. Seventh, religion consists of those actions, purposes, and experiences which are humanly significant. Nothing human is alien to the religious, which sounds alarming. You know, where do you draw the line? I mean, folks are upset with Gavin Newsom, for example, that now 24-year-olds can marry 14-year-olds, and that's not considered, you know, deviant. And culturally, you know, people will argue, well, you know, you go back in time, and I mean, even you have talked, Chris, about how guys like, you know, Admiral David Farragut was commanding naval forces at 12 years old. Thomas Jefferson was running the family farm at around the same age, 2,500 acres or whatever it was, and so on. Yes, but what we're talking about now is a trend in the other direction for different purposes. You know, we were encouraged to become professional children, lifelong children, through the social milieu of so-called education and indoctrination, creating, you know, professional students, as some people would say, and children for life who will not be able to break from the programming, so to speak. And now we're going to go the other way. Now that we've essentially done that, we've fragged the hard drive of the minds of children so that they can be socially engineered from womb to grave. Now we can go back the other direction. Since there's no conscience, there's no bridling or restraint of, you know, the perverse and so forth. Now, gradually by degrees, we'll go back the other direction and, well, you know. So, nothing human is alien to the religious. It includes labor, art, science, philosophy, love, friendship, recreation, all that is in its degree expressive of intelligently satisfying human living. It sounds kind of like Aleister Crowley wrote this, "Do as thou wilt." The distinction between the sacred and the secular can no longer be maintained. Eighth, religious humanism considers the complete realization of human personality, and by the way, the separation that comprises this compartmentalized life was not a biblical thing. You don't read about that in the Bible, not in this context. The distinction between the sacred and the secular can no longer be maintained, is what I'm talking about. So eighth, religious humanism considers the complete realization of human personality to be the end of man's life and seeks its development and fulfillment in the here and now. Doesn't that sound like something that would resonate with these young people? This is the explanation of the humanist social passion. I mean, I swear they would jump up and down if they heard that. In the place of the old attitudes, ninth, in the place of the old attitudes involved in worship and prayer, the humanist finds his religious emotions expressed in a heightened sense of personal life and in a cooperative effort to promote social well-being. A heightened sense of personal life. Reminds me of William Sargent. We'll get to that. Tenth, and you know what Sargent speaks about in religion, you know, voodoo rituals, which is the same as politics and so on. Tenth, it follows that there will be no uniquely religious emotions and attitudes of the kind hitherto associated with belief in the supernatural. In other words, you marginalize that, and you know what? We don't need the Holy Spirit anymore. We don't need divine inspiration. Nah, we're fine. And finally, 12th, believing that religion must work increasingly for joy in living, religious humanists aim to foster the creative in man and to encourage achievements that add to the satisfactions of life. Doesn't all of that sound like it would resonate with these kids? I dare say I think it would. And in all of that, and in what we're listening to, I feel like I'm hearing echoes of Romans chapter 1. And, you know, verse 19, because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them, for since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. So then what happened? Well, you know, we just wanted to, you know, we believe in that, you know, religion must work increasingly for joy in living. Who are we honoring? Who are we glorifying in that? Ourselves? Verse 21 from Romans chapter 1, for even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks. But they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of a corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals, crawling creatures, etc. And then it's a downhill run from there. It's not a slippery slope. It's just kind of off the cliff and straight down at 9.8 meters per second squared, or perhaps faster. So, I don't know. I think, you know, as I said, the Humanist Manifesto seems to ring through in what they're saying, which is in direct contravention to what they say they espoused early on. But enough of that, and let's give a listen to the rest of it. Go ahead, please.
So, yeah, it's very one-dimensional.
For me, music is about finding community through shared human experiences. When a song gives voice to something you thought that no one else could possibly understand. But whose hearts are being touched when the music is being written for imaginary, picture-perfect people? Whose stories aren't being heard? I headed out to meet Ricky Brady, Lauren's friend from church. Ricky has spent the majority of his life as a professional worship singer and songwriter. He competed on season 17 of The Voice, and frankly, has one of the best voices I've ever heard.
When I was like 4 and 5 years old, my mom, dad, and sister would sing like at the church. And I would sit with my grandmother and sing every single word that they were singing. My mom homeschooled me so that I could travel with a Christian singing group when I was 16. And that's when I realized, this is what I want to do.
Ricky worked in almost every facet of the industry, touring consistently with gospel groups, singing backup for major artists, and even writing and recording under a record deal. but he found that being in the closet was stifling his creativity and motivation. He got off the road and accepted a position as the music leader for a church worship team.
The pastor and I, we saw things differently, voted differently, but we were able to mutually respect each other. And
did they know that you were gay?
He still believed, I guess, that it was there, but I wasn't pursuing it, any relationship or anything like that. And so I knew that I needed to at least tell the pastor. There was a part of me that hoped, maybe naively, that because of the relationship that I'd had with the church for years, that they would say, okay, well, let's figure it out. You know, we love you. We appreciate your heart. Anything like that. Mm-hmm. And it was not the response.
So you were fired.
I was basically let go, yeah. I was given the option almost to stay and stay quiet, but not the option to stay and be authentic and honest. I've done a lot of session work here in Nashville, mostly for Christian artists, like choral stuff. I'm now not called for those things anymore.
Our second to last interview was with a major Christian music label. We had a fine experience filming, but after we left, it became clear that they were not comfortable with some of the questions I asked. Hint, it was the gay ones. Following a polite and respectful discourse, we've opted not to include the interview. But I won't deny that it's frustrating not to be able to have an open dialogue, and it's hurtful that this interview is perceived to have been controversial.
Honestly, we didn't really learn anything especially new. There wasn't a major reveal in this interview. The only thing I can think of is that I asked about representation in the Christian music industry and if there was space for a gay artist. And the answer that I received was basically like, I don't know, to be determined. We don't talk about it. Doesn't really come up. Which, honestly, I don't think is totally true, but that was the answer, and we moved on. And there were other questions that were asked as well. So there was a whole phone chain of freak out because I asked a question about representation and inclusion. I think that they don't want to be included in this story. And by not being included, I think that already speaks volumes to what we've heard from other people. It's just pretty sad to think that someone walked away from the conversation we had and was like, I think this could be a problem. Because the question isn't the problem. It's the fact that you're not having the conversation. It's the fact that you're complicit in this exclusion. That's the problem. We are on our way right now to talk with Dan from Jars of Clay. He was the lead singer. If you paid attention to contemporary Christian music at all growing up, like other cool kids like me, then you know that Jars of Clay was a huge band. They were staples of the Christian music industry. I'm curious about what a long career revealed to him about the nature of the industry.
I'm Dan Hasseltine, and I am the singer for the band Jars of Clay.
You're a pretty big band.
We had a good run, I would say. Mm-hmm. We toured for about 22, 23 years. Mm-hmm. If you're reading the bio, it would say multi-platinum, three-time Grammy-winning band Jars of Clay.
Same.
Yeah,
my bio, you know. Too.
In 2014, Jars of Clay faced backlash after Dan sent out a handful of tweets questioning why people were so adamantly opposed to gay marriage.
Lifeway and like all the outlets that sold Christian music had pulled our Jars of Clay stuff off the shelves. We had been disinvited from a bunch of the music festivals and things that we were supposed to do that year. Christian radio had pulled our music off. They weren't going to play it anymore. It was the backlash of the Christian community because I was asking questions about how we treat the LGBT community. The fact that I was asking the questions meant that we were unsafe now. That was the moment where I was just like, okay, I guess we're not going to have this conversation with this community of people. And yet I look at it and I go, I think we were asking the right questions. I don't regret pushing that conversation forward. Mm-hmm. There weren't any other Christian artists that were having that conversation.
There aren't.
There still really aren't.
There
right?
really aren't.
Yeah. And it's just unfortunate because the other thing I learned from it was just there's so many people that have been hurt really badly by the church.
Are there other artists that are sort of where you are but won't say anything publicly because
Yeah, I've got a list. I'll just...
No. I just mean that, like, surely you can't be the only person... Yes. Who's questioning?
A lot of artists that are still in the spotlight, they believe that way, but they're really not allowed to say it. At some point, the value of an artist comes from telling the truth, to lift another person up rather than keep a person oppressed.
It makes me so sad because I think of music that was so there for me, that was like, that felt like so comforting.
Yeah.
I almost have to like redo some of my childhood memories because... Yeah. There are artists that now I think back on the struggles I was going through that I don't know, like, would be there for me. I just have to wonder, who was it for? Was it for me in the closet? Like, who was it for? Would they have rathered that?
Yeah. Wow.
And I don't know.
Yeah. I'm sorry, actually. I really am.
You don't need to apologize.
I know. Well, but it pains me that that's how, like, that's how the story plays out.
If you could make sort of a prediction or maybe a speculation where you see the Christian music industry going, and perhaps what would your hope be?
I think there will be church music. And that's sort of the worship music that exists. And then I think the artists that want to look at the world and describe it, they're just finding their space amongst all the other artists in general music, which maybe is how it always should have been.
The fact that we don't have a Christian artist speaking to the powerful journey of coming out, coming into yourself, who God created you to be, that there isn't that, like, I'll buy that album.
Right.
You know? Yeah. I want to hear that story.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not on a Christian label. They might not be ready for that.
Right.
But it won't make it any less divinely inspired if it finds its way into the world.
I miss worship music. My goal, if, you know, I'm going to start writing worship songs again, is to write songs that I resonate with and that people in my church could sing and you can sing and not be stepping over bad theology or damaging messages.
Sadly, I think the bridge was burned just by coming out, but it's met with an overwhelming amount of peace knowing that I am exactly where I need to be. Everything that I create, music and otherwise, is going to come from a place of complete honesty and oneness with myself and my creator.
We know the resilience of the human spirit. We will always find a way.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I'm excited and hopeful for. And that's what I've learned from my time in Nashville. And also letting people know, if you're gay, you can still listen to Jars of Clay.
Right, yeah.
Don't worry, it's okay.
Yes.
You never left me, and I believe I'm worthy, and you couldn't be closer. I see the light breaking through, so I'm gonna break free. Oh, you're in love. Why does a river pull me? Oh, you're in love. Deeper than the ocean, rising for me.
Thank you for watching Refinery 29. For more videos, click here, and to subscribe, click here.
Isn't that sweet? A human interest piece, isn't that nice? It's more of a humanist interest piece, but see, you got it there at the end. You never left me, and I believe I'm worthy, and you couldn't be closer. Yeah, that's what I believe, and that's all that matters. You know, in typical inverted fashion, the kids are in charge, and whatever they think, whatever feels good, you know, that's what it's all about. Which, again, sounds like Aleister Crowley might as well have been directing the interview in the episode. Do as thou wilt, kids. Whatever feels good, just do that. Because, you know, it feels good, therefore it must be right. And so, you know, it won't make it any less divinely inspired if it finds its way into the world. You know, we don't have to worry about, you can sing about whatever you want and not be stepping over bad theology or damaging messages, really. Everything that I create, music and otherwise, is going to come from a place of complete honesty. And when I hear that, I think, man, you wouldn't know complete honesty if it you know, bit you in the ankle. You are beguiled and misled. And so I have a few comments. That's about it for the first hour already. There are many more comments I could make, but I'll keep it short, perhaps invoking Brandolini's law for the sake of brevity. But for instance, I wish they would have included the Christian music industry interview, which I believe would have proven far more benign than the implications by innuendo, which I think was, you know, the effect that was sought, akin to saying the pastor didn't show up drunk today, which sows the seeds of doubt. Does the pastor usually show up drunk? No, he never imbibes, but he didn't show up drunk today. What's the implication? Even if you know the facts, your mind is left with doubt and wondering. And incidentally, if you watch the video on YouTube, you may, as did I, find it conveniently steeped in mystical esoteric symbolism. For instance, the Hippocratic Vow of Silence cherub on the back of Adam Palmer's jean jacket, or the pentagrams on Ricky Brady's wall, all plausibly deniable, of course, just another coincidence or nine. And, you know, that notwithstanding, let us pause here for a moment and reflect. I think maybe I'll hold that for the second hour, because I have, you know, to sort of punctuate, there is a message. It's not just, I mean, even what I've said, you know, people could try to marginalize or dismiss away, it's not that big of a deal. I hinted at it in Romans chapter 1. And if you read the chapter in its entirety, gosh, that's not a good thing. That's bad. And it seems to be exactly what we have happening here. You know, these people are wandering into and wading into more confusion, more doubt, more uncertainty than certainty. That seems self-evident. And that doesn't sound like a recipe for peace and joy. But there is a... I don't know, maybe a more terrifying concern, perhaps, and not to sow fear, definitely not that, but, you know, to be wise and discerning, again, in the fashion of Hebrews 5. I'll mention that on the other side of this break, and we'll move on. Second hour coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen plan to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.